SMQBs episode 162. The draft is in the books. Somebody give me my Super Bowl ring. I'm feeling pretty good. So I'm bringing to the bar this week, I'm bringing Adam Peters, and I want to know how he masterminded such an unbelievable draft. And I might also want to ask him why he didn't draft the tackle along the way. So that's just a question I may want to get to the bottom of.
What, for our listeners, how about you? Can you tell us who Adam Peters is?
Yeah, it's our GM.
Wait, you have a GM? What's that?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what you I don't know of what you think.
Well, it's been a long time since we've had one. So I've just had to refamiliarize myself with the concept. So in Washington. House, what about you? Who you bringing?
You guys all know who George Kirby is? You better. He is a pitcher on the Seattle Mariners who is better than Greg Maddux. He has better control than Greg Maddux. Oh. The guy, like, I want to have a drink with this guy to understand how he has 45 walks in 62 MLB starts. There have been four pitchers in major league history who had a better than 5-to-1 ratio of strikeouts to walks. He's number one at 7.62, ahead of Jacob DeGrom. Come have a drink with me and George Kirby. The guy's ridiculous.
All right.
What? How long about you? Has he been pitching?
He's had 62 major league baseball starts. So whatever that is, you know, 2-3 years.
2 or 3 years. So he had that last. I am taking Arthur Blank to the bar. Yeah. And I want to see what that blank stare was that we all saw when his GM, Terry Fontenot, informed him that they had selected a guy that was in absolutely no one's first round mock draft, probably not most people's second round mock draft, number 8 as a quarterback after signing one Kirk Cousins to $180 million with $100 million guaranteed contract before the draft. I'd love to.
Well, I'll tell you what, you don't have to say too much more about that because I think we're going to be talking about that a little bit, but you probably just have to meet him at the bar. He's been there since Thursday night.
But you're going to have to go early because bedtime is probably around 7 o'clock. Based on the look on his face, I was thinking that maybe he thought he was surprised to hear they actually had Kirk Cousins as their quarterback instead of Matt Ryan.
Well,
it's like dementia guy.
Jesus.
All right, Rooster. Who you bringing?
I want to sit 4-1 back with Jim Harbaugh and ask him about his plans to turn the effete Los Angeles Chargers into a smash mouth team, which seems to be well on its way.
It does.
All right. Well, let's get into it. It's draft time. House, what do we need to know?
So everybody's talked all about the draft. And we've all heard the great stories and the Michael Penix's craziness. But I thought that our fans would kind of appreciate how the SMQBs break it down, kind of go around, hear what we find to be the three best drafts in your view. I know none of us has really studied film closely, but we have listened to the pundits. We've done our reading. We've seen what's on paper. We've seen what these teams' needs are. What's your three best? What's your three worst? And maybe just a really good draft story that you liked. Who wants to kick it off? Who's ready to go?
I'll go.
Rooster?
My three best don't include the one I'm most excited about, so I'm going to save that one for last. But I hate to say this, but I think the Eagles are up there among the three best. They got a lot of picks. They also picked up more picks for next year. And incredibly, they got two, in my view, A-level starting cornerbacks in one draft. In a era where wide receivers are all the rage, and therefore cornerbacks are extremely important. These two guys sat there for the picking till late, late, late for the Eagles. It's the Eagles have the best luck combined with a savvy GM that I've seen in years, the way these people fall to them. That's number one. Number two, the Steelers have reconfigured their entire offensive line in one draft. They picked up three starting offensive linemen, but Fautana at tackle, Zach Frazier from West Virginia at center, and Mason McCormick, a guard. That's pretty amazing, and I predict at least two of those guys are going to work out. Number three, just based on sheer volume of players who will probably contribute right away, I'd have to go with the Commanders. In addition to Jaden Daniels, they plugged eight holes on their team through this draft, which is incredible. The team I'm most excited about, though, I want to mark the calendar and watch, is I want to see Caleb Williams throwing the ball to Rome Odunze, DJ Moore, and Keenan Allen. I mean, to get Odunze at number nine after getting Caleb Williams number one, that was an incredible draft just for two players. I mean, I think we're ranking teams more on volume of quality picks, and they had these two guys, but they've got to be right up there with those two picks. And I have to say, I love the Giants pick of Malik Nabers. I a lot of people had him as the third best overall player, and we got him at number six. So I've gone way beyond my three. I'll yield the floor.
That's your brand. Yeah. That's your brand.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the Bears can thank some idiotic selections ahead of them in order to be able to get room.
Totally.
Nine.
Totally.
One idiotic pick ahead of them.
Well, one we talked about. Yeah.
But they needed a defensive pass rusher, so they probably weren't going to take Odunze.
Hope, you want to go?
Yeah,
go with your three best.
I got three worst. If Rooster's going three, because I had the Bears and Steelers as well on my three best. And then I did have the Eagles, but I wasn't going to talk about them. So
that's fair.
I kind of already alluded to it, but I mean, how can you not say that the Falcons at number eight lost an opportunity to get a playmaker who would go along with their multi-$100 million quarterback. It just baffles everybody's mind. It doesn't make any sense. And Nix is 24 years old. I mean, not Nix, but Penix is 24 years old. I'm going to allude to Nix in a second. He is, damaged goods, so to speak. He had a great year, no question, but can he put those together and stay healthy? And he's 24. Just makes no sense. And I got the Broncos. I mean, the fuck are they doing drafting Bo Nix at number 12? He is not a number 12 pick. I had him late first round, maybe second round, early second round. I don't see what Sean Payton's doing there. And the Raiders, they needed a quarterback. They didn't get one. Cowboys needed a running back. We'll talk about that a little bit more later.
Mason? One of yours.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could guess the Commanders was definitely on my list. Because they had a smart draft, though. They did. I mean, Rooster talked about it. And by the way, I do think I have a possible answer for why they didn't take a tackle thing. Keep an eye out to see if they trade Jonathan Allen now. So, which would be a poor tackle, which is a possibility. So they, they took with their second pick, Johnny Newton, who a lot of people that thought that was one of the better value picks. Like, he could have been a first rounder. He went pick number 36. Some people had him ranked way higher than that on the board. So by taking him, do you free up the need for Jonathan Allen, who at one point had said he wanted a trade? He's kind of backed off of that, but you got Daron Payne under contract. So it's possible you see a trade, Jonathan Allen, that brings a tackle in, because that's really the only hole they didn't plug, and there was opportunity. So sort of, because otherwise,
some heck of a tackle. That would have to be some heck of a tackle to get for his value.
Yeah, well, maybe you get a tackle and some and a pick or something. But you know, anyway, something to keep an eye on. Look, I also have the Bears. I mean, I think I texted at some point the Bears are winning the draft after two picks. I mean, they have set up. I will tell you, I don't know too much about their offensive line, but with the receivers that they have, two of them solid veterans, and now the rookie. I mean, Caleb can't be walking into a better situation with weapons around him.
And so they're
supporting
Swift.
Him.
DeAndre Swift,
right?
Step at running back.
Yeah,
running back.
So the team that I don't think anybody mentioned yet that I thought was interesting, and I liked what they did were the Chargers. And I guess Rooster sort of alluded to that with wanting to sit down with Harbaugh. But I mean, look, they, you know, if Washington took Joe Alt with the second pick in the draft, you know, they would have been criticized for not getting a quarterback. But I remember taking guys like Chris Samuel and Trent Williams with picks. And, you know, those guys were 10-year tackles playing. And that's what Joe Alt is going to be. Alt's going to be a 10-15 year starter in the NFL. Will I mean, I don't know. Do you even say you go to Pro Bowls anymore because of that whole debacle? Yeah. But
qualified,
you know, whatever. He's going to be a star tackle, and that right there. And then, you know, kind of like you said, Rooster, they just seem to have gotten a little bit tougher as a team. So that's the other one that I was excited about. As far as the losers that I had, I mean, I think Pope hit them all. Denver, Vegas, and Atlanta. Those were the losers that I had. So,
Bison, wouldn't you like to see Trent Williams end his career with the Commanders?
No, fuck that guy. I mean,
it was your owners. It was your former ownership.
It was. Sure, I'd love to see him come back. He's not a free agent, though, is he?
No, I know, but you were talking trade earlier, and I was thinking that would be a cool trade.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That was just a classic Dan Snyder era disaster, the way that all went down. So, but Denver, Vegas, and Atlanta. I mean, geez, the Atlanta thing is. I mean, that's got to be one of the more mesmerizing picks in the history of the draft, doesn't it?
And then their next pick was bad too. After Penix.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll start. I think all you guys covered the really good draft teams really well. The only one I'd throw in there for good measure, part of which was influenced by when Rooster visited out at the combine.
You're going to say the Rams?
The Rams. I think after. After the retirement of Aaron Donald, filling in with Jared Verse and Braden Fisk from the same defensive line, and there's been all kinds of stories that they could just like look across the line. You know, there's something to be said for chemistry, and putting both Verse and Fisk on that line. And I like what Blake Corum did in college. I think he's a pounding running back. I like adding him as a running back. And people have said that this. Other third round pick, this Cameron Kinchins guy, the safety from Miami, he's just a bruiser, like a typical old school Miami baller as a safety. So I like what the Rams did, but all the other ones, I'm glad that all of you guys chimed in on the Bears and Caleb Williams, because I think too often we overlook the most obvious things. And I do think Caleb Williams, we're going to find out to be a very, very special player, a very special quarterback. I kind of couldn't help but feel bad for Justin Fields with what they've surrounded Caleb Williams with, and Justin Fields never even got that opportunity. But I think we've covered that. On the worst, the Falcons second pick, like you said, this guy Rook Arroro, defensive tackle from Clemson. I'm not sure people had him in the second or third round. I mean, they could have, to Pope's point, they could have. If they really wanted these guys, just trade down, get more value, get other picks available to your team. That's my biggest criticism, setting to the side about this whole Penix being already being an older quarterback with a guy who signed for $180 million. You didn't have to draft him at the spots you drafted them, and you could have gotten more value. I did not like what Carolina or the Vikings did in this draft. I think we're all in agreement that J.J. McCarthy is a big question mark. And yes, they got Dallas Turner at number 17, who will be a terrific defensive player for them from Alabama. But they traded up to get both these guys, and the Vikings don't have a pick. They have one, their own first-round pick, and nothing else in the first 100 picks. They mortgaged a lot to get what I think is a question mark quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. I'm surprised he's a quarterback of the future. And Carolina, I know there's these likable stories about this deep draw Southern accent of Xavier Legette, but I'm not impressed from what I've seen so far on tape. Yeah, he's got some standout plays, but I think they had way more needs, including on the offensive line. Their quarterback got killed last year, and between Legette and then Jonathan Brooks as your next pick, a running back who usually doesn't outlast a 3-year contract, and he's coming off of an ACL. I know all the film of him before the ACL was incredible, but I have some using those two picks, given all the needs that they have to support Bryce Young and the rest of that team, and having lost Brian Burns, I did not like what Carolina did in that draft.
I know you don't like JJ. But do you think he's at least the fourth best quarterback in the draft? I mean, where did you think he should have gone?
I mean, I think he's
not 11.
Not 11. I think he's a late first rounder, maybe even a second rounder. I think they, you know, jumping up to grab him, I was very surprised. We'll see. Maybe he's going to surprise a lot of people. But
Just for the record, I'm not as down on him as you are. I think he's going to be a good quarterback.
I think Penix is better. I have one team.
Has the potential to be better.
Well, the thing about Penix is he instantly made Kirk Cousins the healthiest quarterback on the roster. So, I mean, there is that. At least he boosted that up, right?
There's one team I'd add to the questionable list, and that's the Dolphins. They had 7 picks, and they picked Chop Robinson. I was very impressed with him at the combine. But their second most notable pick is Jalen Wright, the running back from Tennessee. They already have A-Chain.
A-Chain, yeah.
And two others, Raheem Morris, Raheem Mostead. And
Mostert, yeah.
And the other guy who used to be on the 49ers with Mostert. They had 3 starting running backs already on that team, one of whom was a rookie last year. And Jalen Wright is like a mirror image of A-Chain. I just don't understand the use of that pick at all. And the other thing I would add is, because I had the Rams as my fourth good one, they also got this guy from Washington State, a defensive end named Brennan Jacks, who's supposed to be pretty good. So they may have just redone their defensive line in one draft, sort of like the Steelers did to the offensive line.
Well, they did. They did have a hole to plug there, right?
Huge hole,
Donald. Yeah. You know, there's a player who was picked who might be perhaps the most important player for this upcoming season, and this is going to surprise you. I can already feel House rolling his eyes, but Xavier Worthy, because of what he can do in the offense in Kansas City.
He's Reek part deux.
Yeah, he brings back a speed element on that passing game that, I mean, just watch out. Watch what he can do, because we know what Mahomes does with a burner on the team. And they haven't had that for 2 years now, or 1 year or 2 years. But that's a big weapon to hand over to Mahomes, and he knows how to use it.
He reminds me of Al Davis picks from the past. Right, fucking track stars, Nehemiah. Track stars with stone hands.
Well, you got Ronaldo, Bob Nehemiah Hayes. And,
But Rooster, you called it Rooster on the pod last week, didn't you? You said you thought he might fall to a team like the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs would have been better off taking Ladd McConkie or whatever his name is. He's a pristine route runner, can run every pattern and has great hands. Xavier is a one trick pony. He wowed the crowd at the combine with how fast he is. But he also, remember, we talked about this at the combine. He lost a bunch of weight just to put in that time. He was down to something like 168, and he's a tall dude.
The Eagles just gave an invite to one Jonathan Ross to show up to their mini camps. You might remember Ross as being
the record that was broken.
Now, you won't remember any of his NFL highlights or any of his records. He ran a 4.22 at the combine, and everybody said, you got to get Ross. The guy runs a 4.22. I just think there's so much more to it than that. Yes, he's got Mahomes as a quarterback and Reed as a coach. He's got that going for you. I agree with Rooster. I think, look, the Chiefs are the Super Bowl champions. Like, how many needs do they really have? So, whatever. Maybe they can just throw it around like that.
They might be without one Rashee Rice.
Yeah, they could be without Rashee Rice. And for that reason, if you've got the luxury of drafting based on just need, not best available, then he's a good pick. We'll see.
I think Xavier's running mate at Texas is a better wide receiver.
Adonai Mitchell.
Yeah. Well, Worthy did okay at Texas. He wasn't exactly a slouch playing big time football.
He burned the Alabama secondary. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Time will tell. There's another team too, by the way, that had an interesting draft, and that's Arizona. They drafted 12 players. And by the way, they got the guy who most said was the hands down number one sure thing in the draft in Harrison Jr., right? I mean, so you get a guy who everybody already is saying is going to be a long time pro. And then you add 11 more guys around him.
Well, can he help resurrect Kyler's career? We'll see.
Yeah.
And in the world is flat category, the Jets needed an offensive lineman desperately, and they drafted an offensive lineman. I would have bet money against that.
Yeah, I'm surprised when you went over the Commanders, Bison. You didn't talk about a couple of these picks that I was impressed by.
I was trying to lay low on it. Go ahead.
Really laying low. But the kid from Michigan that everybody was going nuts about, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, Mike Sainristel.
Who Satan said was pound for pound the best player in the draft.
Everybody, I flipped around to the different channels. I've read what different people have said online. They went nuts over this guy and getting
Ben Sinnott.
And Ben Sinnott, which I think is smart because this notion that you're going to get a lot of production out of Zach Ertz, I wouldn't count on it. He's pretty long in the tooth. So getting a quality, he looks to be a quality tight end was a smart pick at that number two. It was a good draft. It was a good draft for the Commanders. I was
saw
happy
people
about
talking
it.
About him, comparing him to Andrew. I don't know. I mean, I don't know too much about
that's him, high praise.
Yeah, but I did. I mean, they were saying that. So yeah,
he also plays multiple positions.
So
hey, House.
House.
You mentioned it just now. You said you flipped around to the other channels. What channel did most of you guys watch?
I can't get away from Kuiper. I watch.
I love
ESPN.
Mel Kuiper.
I can't get it. It's a train wreck. I can't stop watching.
Was he on ESPN?
Yeah.
So I watched ABC, which was the College Game Day crew.
That was good. I watched some of that.
Yeah. I mean, other than the fact Saban was on there, I just found that to be a really interesting the way that they kind of had the human interest stories. More so than the nuts and bolts, the X and O's, kind of like Kuiper and some of the ESPN guys did. It's just a different approach. But I did not see any of the NFL Network. I don't know if you guys
NFL
did
Network was good too. I was jumping around to them. But
the bottom line is that the NFL draft is such a successful event now. They had over 750,000 people in Detroit this year.
Crazy.
Well, that was the ratings were bonkers. 12 million.
That, Yeah, I mean, that was going to be, I think one of the things we wanted to talk about was some of our favorite stories
from
the draft beyond the players. And Detroit was my favorite story. I don't know why. That's a city that for some reason I've been rooting for some time. I mean, House, we got to we happened to be there at the same time and went over to Comerica Park and took it a little baseball and went out. And I don't know, ever since then, I've just thought it's a cool city. I went back there this last November for a little bit and was there. And good for them. I mean, remember, that was the biggest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the country at one point, and they had 775,000 people turn out for the draft weekend events. Big showing by Detroit, and good for that city. It's just a hardworking, blue-collar city, and so I'm happy for the success that they had.
It was good to see Barry Sanders so involved, too. He's such a class guy.
Yeah.
Now, that was kind of cool the way they did the introductions.
Yes. The NFL does a great job with that, bringing some of these guys that are former players or even some of the current players up on stage. So fun. They've really figured this production element to it out really well. What other good stories? That was a good story, Detroit. What other good stories did you guys like?
I thought it was cool how many people who trace their lineage to another family member who played in the NFL were drafted. You had Jeremiah Trotter Jr. go to your team. That was cool. Yep,
that was cool.
And the owner says to him, "I remember you when you were like 2 years old." And that's pretty cool. Joe Alt's dad played in the NFL and was there with him when he met Harbaugh. Frank Gore Jr.'s son is playing. I didn't realize Frank Gore was that old. Jerry Rice's kid. And then of course, Bison's team drafted Christian McCaffrey's brother, whose dad played in the league for the Giants.
And don't forget Marvin Harrison.
Marvin Harrison, yeah.
And Marvin Harrison. Right.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I don't want to rain on the parade, though, but why wasn't Senior there?
I don't know.
He's very involved in his son.
I know.
Marvin Harrison Senior?
Life and training and everything else. I don't know why.
Well, I saw him being interviewed. So I don't know if he wasn't.
Yeah, I think he was there.
I think he was there, Bison.
I thought he said something because he wasn't there when they were interviewing Junior. And I thought he said something like he wished his dad could be there or something like that. So
Joint interviews before that day that were pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I just wondered why he wasn't there. I mean, it didn't seem like there was any split. I just thought that's why I thought it was off.
Well, I thought it was interesting is there were a lot of players who were selected who weren't in the green room, weren't at the draft. Now, I think a couple of those are because they didn't expect to be drafted so high. But, you know, what was it? Alt was, wasn't he in Minnesota?
Fishing, probably.
No, he was, they had his whole family around and friends. I think he was at some lodge or something, but I thought that was really cool.
I think people didn't want to revisit the Will Levis experience of last year. That was painful.
Yeah,
to watch
it was
that.
Painful.
Yeah,
you know who was right about him all along, Mel
Kiper. Yeah. So my favorite stories from the draft were a couple player stories. I told you guys, and I hope our listeners, if you haven't seen the introduction of Keon Coleman to the Bills, this guy is a trip. He's a Louisiana boy who was a great wide receiver at Florida State. Even Milk admired his play. And it's just a laugh riot. He's so hilarious, so personable, like talking one-to-one with the press. It was really, really funny stuff. But the, you know, Pope was talking about these various human interest stories that they showed during the draft. I don't know if you guys saw the story they shared of Adisa Isaac, the Penn State linebacker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This guy has three siblings. They're all nonverbal. The older sister, I think it is, forget whether it was a brother or sister, it was a brother, had a birth injury with a cord wrapped around his neck and is nonverbal. The other two younger siblings, and he has basically been playing the role of father, brother, athlete, with these kids their whole life. He's an amazing guy. He was a high school captain for 3 years. the MVP of his team for 2 years. He had 25 sacks in his senior season, was the player of the year in New York State. He went on to Penn State, where he tore his Achilles in 2021, came back for 2023 and had 7.5 sacks. And while he was having 7.5 sacks in 2023 and a captain of the football team, he worked 20 hours a week at the local high school, state high school, earning $10 an hour to help kids with disabilities. Like, this guy, I am rooting for this guy on the Ravens. This Adisa Isaac is a very, very special player. I loved all these different stories. That was the one that got me the most.
I think if he hadn't ruptured his Achilles, he might have been picked higher than Chop this year.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, Pope, anything else on the draft that you had?
No, I mean, stories? I guess the thing that really jumps out at me is 6 out of 12 first picks go to quarterbacks. And I don't think any of us saw that coming. It was a run on quarterbacks that I don't think anybody saw.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many work out.
Just to stick with a quick football story, I'm just wondering, is Zeke playing? Is he signed with anybody?
We'll get to there.
So, I think we've got some buzzer beater punches.
Stay tuned.
I think the over on how many of those quarterbacks work out should be 1.5.
It's true. Sorry, Bison.
Let's say 2.5.
I actually think the top three quarterbacks will be there for a long time. I think they're as good a recent quarterbacks we've gotten.
I'm interested to see what Kingsbury does with this guy. You know, that team has a history of a very athletic quarterback turning him loose and having an injury ruin that franchise for a long period of time from that injury, in my opinion. Bison knows better, but I think they have to be very careful about what they do, letting this guy's legs run wild and Jaden Daniel. I don't know how you feel about Bison, but he really became a very, very good passer this past year for LSU. I'd like to see him pass a whole lot more than see him run.
Well, I think, you know, I'm gonna have to go back to Saban again. And Saban's comment on him was, you got to keep in mind that he is a passer who can run, not a runner who can throw. So I just think there's a different mindset, a different approach with him. With RG3, and you know, RG3 was one of the first guys to run, you know, that they designed runs for. Now we've got quarterbacks who are running all the time. With RG3, they were really forcing the run pass option and they called a lot of plays for him. And yeah, I mean, that was a little bit of a different era. I think some of the coaches know how to protect these guys when they do run, but I don't think you'll see a ton of called running plays for Daniels. I think what you might see is that when he decides to go, he gets out of the pocket fast. And that's what makes him effective is he's apparently pretty decisive, and when he goes, he just goes. But I don't think you're going to see a ton of cold plays.
He needs to learn how to slide quickly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Get out of bounds. Yeah.
I predict. Well, I don't predict. I think I know right now. Both Bo Nix and Penix are more NFL ready than Drake May.
Oh, I think
Drake May has to sit and watch for a little while.
I don't think so.
Well, he's got the time because he's probably the youngest of all of them, too. So he's got time if he does need to do that. I think his footwork needs to get better, too. So, but they all need that. I mean, look, all these guys need good coaching, Caleb included. If they don't have the right support, the right system, the right setting, any of them could fail. We know that. We've seen superstars. I mean, think about it. One of the only real sure things, it was a sure thing, was Andrew Luck. And even that career didn't turn out the way most thought it would. So, you know, it's a little bit of a crapshoot, but you got to do it. You just got to do it. So, all right. Anything else on football? Let's get to some NBA hoops. Hope. God, that's got to hurt a little bit, huh?
Woo! Yeah. For you YouTubers or people who will see it on social media, I have the virtual background is the end of the game yesterday, Luka looking quite dejected, walking off the court. That was one of the more amazing playoff games I've seen as far as ebbs and flows. I mean, they were down by 31 in the second quarter and came all the way back. I mean, usually teams that are down by that amount, when they come back, they don't quite make it over the hump. I mean, you could argue that the Mavericks didn't make it over the hump because even though they went up by one on Kyrie's ridiculous shot, they didn't score again because the Beard took over and Paul George hit an impossible shot from behind the backboard, three-pointer, which I think if he misses that shot, probably the Mavericks win the game. I think most people believe that. The bigger story is playoff picture overall. There's two series that are 2-2, and those are the 4-5 series, which are Mavs Clips and Magic Cavs. Every other series is either over, almost over, or will be over soon. The Magic came back strong with two huge wins at home. I don't know. Just because Cleveland won the first two at home. I don't know. Magic seemed like they're playing with a lot of momentum now with Paolo, and they're looking strong. Mavs Clips, I have no idea. I think we're going 7 and it's a toss up. I don't think Kawhi's playing again. And I think Luka, you know, one of the themes of the playoffs so far is injuries. I think Luka is hurt. He's got a right knee issue, which I think is going to linger, and he's probably not going to be as effective. Like, he wasn't effective yesterday. What are the series that are almost over? Boston's up 2-1 over Miami. I think they asserted their dominance in game 3. I think they take game 4 and close it out game 5. Oklahoma City's up 3-0 on New Orleans. I think they finish that out pretty quick. Indiana's up 3-1 on the Bucks, but because Giannis is out, now no Dame. Bucks, injuries are going to ruin them for the year. Knicks, Sixers, we'll talk about that a little bit more, I'm sure, with House and Rooster, our SMQB violent playoff series. But it's hard to see the Sixers coming back 3 games. Now they're down 3-1. Nuggets are up 3-1 in the Lakers. I think they'll finish them off. And the T-Wolves took care of business and beat who we thought, going into the season at least, was going to be a very strong candidate for Western Final. The Phoenix Suns, the dream team, never came together. And now they're in shambles, and we don't know which direction they're heading.
Shambles.
They are. Don't you agree?
They are big trouble.
That's kind of the theme of these playoffs. I think the thing, you know, one of the themes of these playoffs is sort of the changing of the guard and the end of a couple of eras, the Suns and the Warriors.
Yeah, didn't even talk about the Warriors. They didn't make it to the next.
And you got to say, I mean, listen, I think we got to talk Knicks Sixers, but House, that Sixers window, man, it's
closing.
Like it's closing.
I mean, it is, but it isn't, because Maxey's so young and so good, and frankly, I think a player that they can build around. But if you don't have rebounding and either a very strong power forward or backup center, with a guy like Embiid playing on kind of 1.5 legs, I don't blame Embiid for anything at the end of yesterday's game. I was at it. We'll talk about that later in the pod. But I don't blame Embiid. He did not have a good shooting fourth quarter, but nobody did.
He also didn't have a rebound in the fourth quarter. In any one of the 4 games.
He doesn't have the hops because of his injury.
Yeah.
Clear.
He can't even... Every real rebound that he could go up for could end at least the playoffs, if not beyond it. He cannot land safely on that knee.
It's hard to get an offensive rebound when you're hanging out at the three-point line.
Look, I think they made a crucial, crucial error. Paul Reed has one of the worst plus minuses of the entire league in this playoffs. Admittedly, he's not played well when Embiid's gone out and needs a breather. Yesterday, he played poorly. I think it was the first or second quarter, end of the first quarter. He played poorly and he never came back in the game. And Embiid was totally gassed in the fourth quarter. So not only was he gassed, they had nobody else to rebound. that Nurse is a great coach. That was poor coaching, is to not give Reed a, like, not give Embiid a breather and not bring Reed in and get some rebounding help. Brunson put on a show. The Knicks made their shots when they needed to in the fourth quarter. By the way, the Knicks, I think, had 9 points on field goals in the fourth quarter. Nine. I think the rest of it was free throws and stuff. It's not like they shot the lights out. Neither team played a very good fourth quarter, but the Knicks had timely scoring, very good defense, and I hate to rebounding. Say it. They look, this is just so painful to say, but they really look on the court, live in person, like they want it more. They just do. They are suffocating on defense. They're recklessly throwing their bodies across the floor, and it's working for them. I don't like how much Tibbs cries on the sideline. He cries for a foul on every play, it seems like it. But the guy, he does, Rooster, but the timeouts that he calls.
Right, but how could you, of all people, say that?
The timeouts that he calls and the plays that he designs, I think the whiner has outcoached Nurse. And yeah, I have nothing left to say.
I'm still waiting for you to acknowledge that Embiid intentionally tried to hurt two of our players.
I don't think that's true.
In game three.
I don't think that's true. But anyway, Rooster, look, I think the Celtics are there for the taking. And
no, I don't know about that.
I do. I think the Celtics are there for the taking. I think they're very good, but I think they're not unbeatable. The Knicks could give the Celtics fits.
This was the first of the four games where Brunson actually scored up to his potential.
He shot the ball 34 times.
So, well, he made like 19 of them.
18 of 34.
But it proves your point, House, that the rest of the team just plays so well together. When Brunson's down, Dante picks up the scoring. When Brunson's hitting him, Dante didn't even try to score.
OG was incredible.
OG was incredible, and Hart was missing easy shots. He missed free throws. He wasn't scoring, but he out rebounded, you know, your front court.
Yep.
So the guy's invaluable, even when he's just not hot offensively. So yeah, I love the way they play together as a team. I just wish I could see this team with a healthy Julius Randle. And
I gotta go back to the Suns. Not enough is going to be written, said, everything about the fact that a combination of Beal, Booker, and Durant are a big fat zero. I mean, yep. A big fat zero. And Bison, you couldn't have gotten rid of Beal fast enough. I mean, wow, this guy is a nothing, and they're saddled with $53 million with him. They've got no draft picks going in the future. Durant can't stand the coach. I don't know what's going to go with Vogel.
Vogel's gone.
He's gone, right? So yeah. Vogel's gone, and I don't know what happens with that team. But they
can't stand him. I never was a big Beal fan. Beal took over because he was the only player on the court for the Wizards for a long time. He was the only guy there. He scored a lot because he was the only guy. But I just never liked the way he interacted with John Wall when Wall was healthy. It just always seemed to me that Beal was like a little more hype than he really was worth. I don't know. He was loved in Washington, but I just never felt it. I didn't get it. So I'm not stunned here.
I think their GM should go too. I mean, they gave away the farm to get KD, and then they turned around the next year and did the same thing with Beal. Now they have no bench, they have no point guard, and they have no rebounding. They have three guys who have no chemistry together, who are big names, but didn't work out.
And no picks in the future. They're going to trade one of those guys away if they can.
I think they're trading KD. Because no one wants Beal. Who wants Beal? And they can't trade Booker. He's too young.
Unbelievable.
He's been around a while. I mean, we could talk about it.
We probably should say something more about Anthony Edwards.
Yes.
He could be the future face of the NBA.
He's a megastar now.
Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And he's got the swagger too that, you know, people like.
And you guys saw that Jordan dunk that he did where he switched hands and went with the left.
KD and LeBron recognize this guy's greatness already.
Of course, their coach. Did you see what happened to him?
Oh yeah.
Got hit on the sideline.
Patellar tendon or something.
Patellar tendon.
Surgery.
Has to have surgery before their next series.
That's a bad injury.
Anthony Edwards is only 22 years old. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, he came out of Georgia after 1 year, I think.
Yep.
And we can talk about it later next time, but, you know, what's going to happen to the Lakers? Because I don't think we're going to see the same team next year.
Yep.
No. I mean, to be fair, though, they are running into a juggernaut right now. I mean,
they are. Well, they should have won Denver game two. That was a choke. But
Denver is Denver. All right. Anything else on the NBA?
Nope.
Rooster, how about some NHL? Have you been squeezing that into your
schedule? I think there are two themes emerging from round one of the NHL playoffs. I'm not going to get into individual games and things like that, but people like Pope and me who really get excited about the NHL, like right around playoff time and not a whole lot before then.
I love playoff hockey.
The reason we love playoff hockey is when there's game sevens. I mean, they're just awesome.
Or overtimes.
You're not going to see that at all in round one, probably. You got the Rangers swept the Caps. Carolina's up 3-1 on the Islanders. Florida's up 3-1 on Tampa. Boston is up 3-1 on the NHL's version of the 76ers, the Toronto Leafs, who can't get out of the first round ever. Sorry, House, I just had to throw that in there. Edmonton's up 3-1 on the Kings. The Canucks are up 3-1 on Nashville. Colorado's up 3-1 on Winnipeg. I mean, it's on and on. The only opportunity for a game seven that's still is potentially out there is Pope's Stars are down 1-2 to the Golden Knights.
And tonight's the big game.
I'd love to see you tie that up because nobody needs to see Vegas 2 years in a row in the Stanley Cup Finals. But that's it. You know, that's game. It, for me, round one has been kind of boring because none of the series are really close. The other thing is there's just like we were talking about in the NBA, we're looking at the end of some eras here. You know, the Capitals need to rebuild, right, Bison?
Yeah. I mean, the Caps were sort of rebuilding. They weren't really thought to make the playoff. It was a surprise that they got there this year.
But they were rebuilding with an eye towards Ovechkin, you know, being this marquee piece that was eventually going to break a record. He was so horrible in that Rangers series. I wonder whether he's going to last long enough to break this record. This is the first time he's ever played in a playoff and not scored a point in his entire career.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
They're saying that they think we're going to start finding out about a surgery or something coming up. Or maybe he was and he didn't get a lot of ice time either at the end.
Yeah.
So they think he was injured. But yeah, but, I mean, he was, yeah.
Toronto, they've got to figure something out. They can't keep doing this. They can't keep choking in round one year after year. They're going to have to get tougher for one thing. And I wish Milk were here, but I think we're seeing the beginning of the end of the Lightning.
It's too bad.
I actually think we're seeing the end of the end of the Lightning. I think we saw the beginning of the end last year.
It's too bad. It's a damn shame.
They're getting old, and they're not replacing these guys.
It's a damn shame, Milk. It's really a damn shame.
It's just a damn shame. Sorry for you, buddy. Hate to see it.
One other highlight. Brad Marchand broke the all-time Bruins playoff scoring record in the last game against the Leafs. He now has 56 goals in his career in the playoffs, which is pretty amazing. But anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and so hockey, that the between the NBA and hockey, those wrap up when in November, right? That's when we'll have champions in those two.
Yeah.
Of 25.
I'll get back to you. We'll get back to you in the finals.
Yeah.
No, there's be some good second round hockey matches
in June. All right. House, it's time to make a run for the Rosen.
I feel like I had this position as the Kentucky Derby handicapper based on my height. I'm the only one close to a jockey's size. So I'm going to take the jockey of the group is going to take this. The most exciting 2 minutes in sports, the Run for the Roses will be played this Saturday. Will be ran this Saturday at Churchill Downs. I think we've all been there now. I think we've all been, right? Because we were together.
I've not been for a Kentucky Derby, but
not for Derby. I've been to Churchill Downs, yeah. But not to.
It's a pretty special place, right, guys?
Yeah, it is.
With ton of history. Very cool place.
A little bougie,
but it's fun. It's fun to, it's to horse do racing. It for a day. This race is always kind of like, who's going to show up in this jam-packed crowd of 20 horses? It thins out the pack for the Preakness and the Belmont, but this is really the big run. Interestingly, the last 5 years, the favorites have lost. The odds for the last five winners have been 15-1, 81-1, 12-1, 8-1, and 9-2. So the fact that you're the odds on favorite does not make you the favorite, at least in the last 5 years. This year's favorite is a horse named Fierceness that is going off at 5-2. His problem is that of the 20 horses running, he's running from post number 17, which means that's a long way to run the track. Obviously, the shortest way to run that mile and a 16th is to run from the first position, but then you're kind of tucked in against the rail. The ideal thing is to kind of be somewhere in the 7-12 range. Interestingly, though, this horse, Fierceness, which, by the way, horses coming out of the 17 spot at the Kentucky Derby are 0-44. His trainer is Todd Pletcher. Yeah, that's some trend. His trainer is Todd Pletcher, who has had 62 horses start in the Kentucky Derby but only two wins, the last in 2017. But here's the thing. A lot of reasons that the 17 horse runs not as well out of that position is because he's running alongside of a bunch of speed horses and has to keep up and just tires out. A lot of the speed horses, the ones that are going to run out to the front in the beginning of the race, are closer to the inside, the earlier post position. So there's a chance that if he's run well, that Fierceness could come in the money. I don't have him as the winner. The second best bet is Sierra Leone, who's going off at 3-1 from the 2 post position. He's got to deal with traffic on the rail. The last time someone from the 2 position won the race was in 1978. So both of those favorites are running from not ideal positions. You guys, I'm going to give you a tip right here. You can thank me later. Just a Touch. Just a Touch is going off in the 8th post.
Isn't that the same thing as a tip?
Just a tip. Just a Touch. Just a Touch is your
now
tip.
Now I've got to check the explicit box.
Nothing. It's all clean. Right.
I think we're good. Show,
this is where the kids learn how to handicap races. Just a Touch is going off at 10-1 from the 8th post. The horse's bloodlines include Justify and Tap It, which Justify won the Triple Crown and Tap It was a great, great horse. It was a runner-up in two of the major stakes, the Gotham and the Bluegrass, to Sierra Leone. So I'll give it to you guys right here. The two best horses I think running in this race are Forever Young at 10-1 running for the 11 position and Just a Touch. I'm going to tell you to box your superfecta at 11, 8, 17, and 2. That's Forever Young, Just a Touch, Fierceness, and Sierra Leone. If you're looking for a long shot, look for Just Steel going off at 20-1. The Dwayne Lucas horse already ran 7 times as a 2-year-old and also comes from Justify Bloodlines. Your long shots, Just Steel. Your Your ticket is going to be the Box Superfecta 11-8-17-2. Good luck to the horses and all you.
Hey, House, I always bet on Baffert's horse. Where? Which one is he?
I don't think Baffert's running this year. I think he's still under some kind of suspension.
Is he still suspended?
Yeah. I think Baffert can't run for a while longer.
He went to the fucking Christy Gnome school.
Yeah, I was going to say he's Christy Gnome's animal handler.
Yeah, he's out. He's out for this year. He's exiled. He's exiled for, I guess, 3 years. And so anyway, no Bob Baffert this year. So you're going to have to choose a different trainer. Dwayne Lucas and Todd Pletcher, pretty good bets. But there's some other
Fletcher's
new.
Good.
Yeah, there's some other new trainers that are good, too. Have fun. Make some money.
Mint juleps.
All right. Make some mint juleps, right. All right, hey, who's got a punch? Don't call it a
comeback. Oh, I've got a punch.
You go.
The self-punch. Not punching myself, I'm punching my GM/owner, one Jerry Jones. Unbelievably, we've been hearing the talk for months now that he's still infatuated with Zeke Elliott, and that he was thinking about bringing him back, but we were really, really hoping and thinking that he would draft a running back so that would not happen. But, of course, Jerry doesn't draft a running back, so today it's announced that Zeke has re-signed with the Cowboys at $3 million. We've paid him a shit ton of money over the years.
And we got him
$3 million. And the reason is because Jerry says that he had a very strong finish to last year. Well,
oh my God.
Look at that. Oh, I just did the last four games. 13 carries, 54 yards against the Jets with a 9-yard longest. Against the Bills, 14 carries, 39 yards. The longest. Against the Broncos, 12 carries, 27 yards. 6 was the longest. And against the Chiefs, 11 carries, 25 yards. So he had 50 carries for 145 yards.
Oh my God.
Averaging 2.9 yards a carry and 36.5 yards a game, the last four with New England, and Jerry calls that a strong finish. So let's get him on our fucking running back stable, along with other greats like Rico Dowdle, Malik Davis, Snoop Connor, and Deuce Vaughn.
Look, it's been
Royce Freeman. Don't forget Royce Freeman.
What's the expression, Bison? Yeah, we Royce are, Freeman. And Royce Freeman, yes. What is expression? It's, we are. So what is it?
All in?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Listen, Jerry Jones hasn't finished in 25 years, so he can't possibly know what a strong finish looks like anymore, right?
Can we rewind?
The reason why Jerry has to sign Zeke is because he franchise tagged Tony Pollard last year and then let him get away for nothing. The guy is incompetent. Incompetent.
Last week when we mentioned that the Cowboys were talking to Zeke, Pope, you were incredulous. There's no way.
No way.
Mark my words.
We are going to draft a running back. This is all we'll go. Because, you know, Jerry
Unfortunately,
flirts.
Unfortunately, Jerry's dumber than you give him credit for.
You know, Jerry flirts. I mean, he wanted to draft Johnny Football and was talked out of it. But, no, you know, there's no sane heads at the Star anymore if they think Zeke is the answer. Either they want to run Dak out of town.
I'm so happy. As long as we're punching ourselves,
yeah, this is a tough one, House. I don't like this one. I got to tell you,
there was a pod. I wish I remember what number it was, but it had to do with the Eagles playing at the Washington Commanders, and Bison went off on the Washington fans for giving up their seats.
We were at that game.
Was that the one that we were at? That was the one we were at that he gave the punch for?
No, it was a different one. But
Carson Wentz got booed so badly.
There is no excuse for what happened. But what's being written about a lot is one owner of the Washington Commanders, Josh Harris, who apparently is really all about the money and not about his local love for a sports team, given the fact that he owns the Devils, the Commanders, and the Sixers. But he put a whole bunch of tickets up for sale higher than the regular price, apparently. And, you know, the Sixers have the ability to do that, to put unused aftermarket tickets up. And he knew what was going to happen to it. And I was there. I have been to a lot of Philadelphia sporting events in my lifetime. I have never. And by the way, lots of Mets fans come down to the Phillies. That always happens, particularly when in years when the Phillies are down. And even when the Phillies are good, a lot of Mets fans come down. Part of my thinking is that it's an easier and cheaper ticket for New York fans to get. Like, I guarantee you the Knicks fans paid a lot less for a Sixers ticket than they would have to pay to get into Madison Square Garden. Plus, the Knicks have not really had anything to do in the postseason for a long time. These fans are excited. That's fine. But that does not give an excuse to Philadelphia fans to sell their goddamn tickets to Knicks fans or even just make them available. It's absurd. Whoever's responsible for it, if you're a Philadelphia fan, learn the acronym. You are a NARF. You are not a real fan. If you made that ticket available, you are not a real fan. You are not welcome back at the Wells Fargo Center. You caused our team to lose yesterday. The fans absolutely affect what happens on the court. You are NARFs. You're not let in. And Josh Harris, if this was your doing, goodbye. Go to the Devils. Go to the Commanders. We don't want you. Leave. But this is likely the end of the Sixers season. I don't think we win the next game. I do think the Sixers can keep their tee times for Thursday. And so if that's the last game of this season, it's an embarrassment, a stain on the history of Philadelphia sports. And for all of you that sold those tickets, there's a punch in your nuts.
It's pretty hard to blame the owner, isn't it? I mean, how does the owner stop it other than just putting tickets up for sale? I mean, if Knicks fans wanted to buy them and they were cheaper, they would have bought them then too.
He knows what's happening to those tickets.
I don't know.
Sell them to your Sixers fans.
Yeah, I don't know. I looked into that, all that with the Commanders and why we could never have anybody, any home games. I don't know. But yeah, it was strange for Philadelphia.
Dolan would figure out how to keep people out of Madison Square Garden. I mean, he's good at that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a little facial recognition goes a long way.
Alice, I don't want to make it even worse too, but where were the brawls? I mean, there should have been some brawls in the ramps on the way out of there. Those Knicks fans were dancing on the.
It's a bunch of NARFs. It's too many NARFs that are attending it. I went with my kid, Jake, and I said to Jake, you know, buddy, that if this were at the Philly Stadium or the Eagle Stadium, some people will get their heads knocked off. Apparently there were some fights in game three because the Knicks had a similar crowd, but I don't know. It was disgusting. And they were like, you know, saying FMB'd after the game in the concourse and then putting a Knicks jersey on Wilt Chamberlain statue outside. I mean, there's a Yiddish word for it called ashanda. It's a shame. It's a terror. It's disgusting what happened. It's disgusting. And by the way, John Starks, get off my effing court. Like, you stop it. You're not playing the game anymore. Just leave. Leave already. Just end the series, please.
All right. I do kind of want to keep tweaking and keep this going a little bit
game
longer.
Five. Oh, man.
Any other punches?
I have a quick one. I'm punching the NFL Today show. They've become so politically correct. They can't stand to have anyone who's opinionated on the show anymore. So they've gotten rid of Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason. And particularly Boomer, I think, was bothering them with some of his opinions. Boomer can say what's on his mind and rattle a few people. And replaced him with frickin' Matt Ryan, who's a robot with skin stretched across it. That guy's as dull as watching paint dry. And now we're going to have to listen to James Brown hosting Matt Ryan, Bill Cowher, and Nate Burleson. Nate's interesting, but Bill Cowher is dull also. I mean, I don't know if I'm ever going to tune into that show again. I, of course, loved Phil Simms, but I'm a homer on Phil Simms. But at least Boomer had some provocative opinions every now and then. You're not going to get any of that anymore with that crew.
Rooster, you think they're done, or are they going to go somewhere else?
What's that?
You think they're done, or are they going to go somewhere else?
You know, I think Boomer's got a really good career in the New York area with podcasts and radio shows, and is going to do just fine with those. And he's, if you want to talk about opinionated, you listen to one of his radio shows, he says some stuff on those. And Bill Sims is, I think he's like 68 years old. He went from being the 20-year analyst for CBS Sports, calling all the big games until they brought in Romo, to this. He may be ready to just retire. I don't know.
He could go over to NBC and work with his son.
Yeah, he'd be better than his son, that's for sure.
Hmm. All right, any other punches? Nope. Anybody got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce. Ah!
I have a nice little quick one there, too. I can't pronounce this guy's name. Anybody know the name of the head coach of OKC?
I don't even know who it is.
The Thunder?
Danio?
Yeah, Mark Danio.
Yeah.
He's only 39 years old.
Yeah.
He's super smart, very personable, data-driven, but also personable. I mean, he's brought that team to the point where they're about to sweep the Pelicans, and was just recognized as coach of the year by the NBA, which probably a lot of people didn't even know, but kind of a Cinderella story. Nice story. Good guy. Smart guy. Glad to see it happen.
Good one.
All right. Who's got a buzzer beater?
Don't look now.
I'll give you one. Okay.
You go. I'll just say, don't look now, but the Phillies have pitching, and that's something they don't normally have. They've set the record for April for a 100-something-year-old franchise. They're 19-10, still with two games to go. Their ERA is the lowest in the National League. They're only behind the Mariners, I think, in the all of baseball, and hitting is going to be dependable. But boy, if the Phillies pitching is healthy and they stay together in this way this year. Rangers, they've got three guys in the top 10 in Vegas odds for Cy Young between Wheeler, Nola, and Ranger Suarez. And Ranger could be the best of them so far this year. Pretty impressive stuff. Let's hope they stay healthy and they keep it going.
Phillies and Braves could be a great dogfight all the way to the finish.
It's impressive what the Braves are doing without Strider.
Yeah. Also, on a happier note, don't look now, but the Astros suck. They're 9-19. They're the second worst record in baseball behind the White Sox. I love it. On a more serious note, Candace Parker retired after 16 years with the WNBA. She was a two-time national champion at Tennessee, first woman to dunk during the NCAA tournament, and was a three-time champ in the WNBA, two-time MVP, and is going to transition just beautifully into her second career as a TV analyst. She's already better.
Yeah, she already has.
Than most men, I think, who do that job. And she can cover men and women's basketball just fine.
Yeah, she's a featured analyst on whatever the TBS crew is.
She's really good.
Yeah, she's really good.
All right. We got Miami Grand Prix this weekend.
Oh,
F1 back to the U.S. for the first time this season. And also the big news, and this goes into the category of if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to see it, does it make a noise? Nico Hülkenberg has signed with Kick Sauber, which will be the Audi team next year. So that's the first sort of domino to fall in the what they call silly season of all the contracts and everything. That was interesting to me that
What about all the smoke that Verstappen may meet with Mercedes after Miami? What's going on?
There's
with
a lot of smoke.
Wow.
A lot of smoke. Wow. Adrian Newey might. Could Adrian Newey be going over to Toto?
Could be. Lots happening.
Bison, right, tell the listeners.
Give a preview.
Guest host next week.
Oh no, we're gonna keep that. We gotta keep that secret, don't we? Until then,
Special surprise. We have a special surprise on the next. Definitely listen in for the next one, everyone.
Along with a big announcement and a surprise guest.
The SMQB is moving on up.
Moving on up. That's it. All right, guys.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.